consistent with your lesser included theory.
Well, it's not going to be like the Harris case, you know, they sent it,
brought it back on manslaughter.
Yeah, if they tried it again on manslaughter, then he would not have been able to defend on the basis that that it was first-degree murder. And of course, I've been acquitted of first-degree murder, so it wasn't manslaughter.
I move the adoption of Section 13.
Well, just a second.
That's where it is. Go ahead.
No, I've been reading here and I can't find it. Did we delete that thing on the conspiracy thing, or is that back in the section we skipped?
What, delete what?
Well, you said when I got started talking about this, you know, conviction of one.
Oh, you're talking about the last four words, five words of sub 3.
Yeah.
We voted on that. You were against it in subcommittee.
We voted
to leave it in. It was originally in brackets, and Cross representative moved to take away the brackets, one of his more stellar motions.
Is it here?
No. And this is a real policy, this is a real change in the law generally.
It is in the law of modern times, but it's not the change of the old common law.
This would mean that you can't be convicted of both the substantive offense and conspiracy to commit that offense. And
if you're acquitted on a substantive offense, you can't be tried for conspiracy.
No, right. But you can't convict him of both. And in other words, this is relevant to the discussion we had earlier, where we were sort of assuming, well, if he slips off the hook on the conspiracy, we might nail him on the substantive offense.
But this still doesn't have, this is not my issue, that once he's been convicted of the conspiracy, gone to the pen and got out, and continues the conspiracy, he would have a good defense.
That'd be a different course of conduct.
We must have deleted that in
That'd be a different course of conduct.
Did we delete that in the...
What all this says is that for the same course of conduct, though you can indict him for conspiracy and to rob the bank and bank robbery, you can't convict him of both.
Now, there's one thing that I want to make sure that I'm clear on. The way I envision this, but I'm not sure the way the result would be, so you have the person charged with the conspiracy and the burglary or your arson situation that you had there before. All right, now, the way I'm assuming that the verdict, the jury would go out, the judge would instruct them that they can only convict on one. They cannot return verdicts guilty on both. Substantive offense, they cannot convict on the conspiracy. Or would, prior to the thing going to the jury, would the state be required to elect whether they want to go to the jury on the principal offense or the conspiracy? And I don't think that the state should be put to that.
Any more than they should elect between manslaughter, first and second degree.
That's probably a good point. I'm not sure.
But I want to make sure that we're clear on it.
It ought to be cleared up because.
Sorry, I think it sticks in my mind. Right?
Suppose you got a conspiracy to hold.
No, conspiracy.
Suppose you got a two-count indictment. One is conspiracy to rob the bank, two is robbing the bank. Now, when you send it to the jury, you say to them, if you find him guilty of count two, you can't find him guilty of count one. I'm not sure that this language here.
Well, that was kind of half the point of my question a while ago.
Carries that meaning with it.
You told me that it is definitely the lesser included.
Well, the question arises. Doesn't the question arise? Go ahead, Frank.
I'm not so sure that conspiracy would be the lesser included offense.
Attempt would be
a lesser included.
Well,
yeah,
aren't the type of things you're talking about, Frank, that's what I was about to get at, is that we may want to impose a higher liability on the certain types of conspiracies to commit misdemeanor. For example, a conspiracy to make a bookworm.
Of course, there's a substantial difference between conspiracy. In other words, if you think of conspiracy, attempt, or commission as a chain, you look at it one way, but conspiracy really doesn't fit that chain. Attempt does. You can't have the crime without an attempt.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like
solicitation and conspiracy are
two different characters.
Yeah, and they're different casts from attempt and commission because they exist on their own rights. Attempt is merged, if that's a proper word, into commission, yeah. If there is a commission. Mm-hmm. But not so with conspiracy. You can commit a crime with never having a conspiracy problem or a solicitation problem.
Well, conspiracy can often be a higher social evil than
the
crime itself.
You want to get those people that sit there and continually run hubs.
Steal hubs.
Yeah.
Or hub gaps.
Because if you get rid of the hub, maybe the wheel won't.
The only thing is, I'm not sure that you don't almost have to deal. I think we're getting at this in here anyway, but I think that type of conspiracy has to be dealt with by a separate statute. This was the problem they had last year. In the legislature, you've got to build out here to make all conspiracies a felony.
Did it pass?
No,
it
didn't pass.
The idea of the bill was to get at the organized crime situation.
Well, the conspiracy was in the bookmaking. Conspiracy, the big guy who runs the bookmaking is more serious than the little guy that takes the paper, the numbers.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a provision in the Sentencing Act as envisaged within the Model Penal Code for enhanced penalties for this kind of criminal conduct. Now, I don't know what the provision will be in our code, but it is a subject and a problem that's recognized as being part of the sentencing problem rather than the definition of the crime.
Well, Mr. Chairman, can I maybe make a motion on this that when we get to sentencing, we do review the question of whether there aren't certain types of that we adopt as a general policy that conspiracy is a lesser included crime, but when we get to sentencing, we review the matter and see if there aren't certain conspiracies that should be treated actually as an elevated offense.
Well, we adopt the policy that conspiracy is a lesser included crime.
As a general policy.
Of course, this statute almost makes it lesser included.
It's damn near, yeah.
Section 3 does. But this is what I was saying when I referred to a while ago, that basically what they want to do here is make a situation where if you write checks for one company, you're only dealing with one company, you're part of the thing. The conspiracy is actually a different crime entirely, and you can commit two different crimes and be convicted two different times, I see.
I don't see any reason why you want to make conspiracy, except in some certain circumstances, do you want to make conspiracy a separate crime? It really is, it should be a lesser included offense. Normally, for the normal type of situation where two guys commit a bank robbery, I don't think that, if you commit a bank robbery, that should be the important offense. Conspiracy is a lesser included in that case. Now, there are certain types of social evils where I think conspiracy should be regarded as a separate crime.
You're talking in favor of this 3.
Yeah, subject to the proviso that we review the situation of what types of conspiracies we do want to treat as a separate crime.
Yeah, actually,
certain specific types of conspiracies.
Well, Lee, I agree with you that ought to be the policy, but not necessarily limited to conspiracies. It ought to be, the focus ought to be on the kind of people involved in the crime, not the crime itself. And that's really what you're getting at. If it's a conspiracy by a mafia type group, it's more serious than a conspiracy by the run of the mill.
But you can't legislate that way.
Well, you can by the enhanced penalties provision as it is now done in the Model Penal Code, without mentioning conspiracy.
Oh yeah.
You look to the kind of person involved rather than the crime. And really, that's what we want to focus on. The most dangerous.
Well, how do you mean
you
look at the kind of person?
Well, a
professional criminal.
I mean, if he has a
there is an attempt to define what a professional or more dangerous kind of criminal is in the sentencing provisions.
Do they do that in terms of whether he's been previously convicted?
I forget what the standards are, what the limitations are. I only recall a general policy.
Well,
do you remember what it is?
Lee,
I don't want to. My
motion, because I think it still determines the issue that's been raised, and I think that's the only way we can agree it up yet.
You'll restate or what your motion?
My motion is
that it relates necessarily to the number of convictions.
That we approve the language in subsection 3 relating to conspiracy.
It's not a criminal.
But as a proviso, when we get to the question of sentencing, we come back to this and determine whether either we try to treat this as a sentencing problem or whether we should treat certain types of conspiracies as a separate offense, a separate elevated offense.
All right, so, all right, that's now, clear enough.
We got here, we got, you know, the principal offense, we got the attempt to commit the offense, that's clearly an included offense. Solicitation, probably an included offense. Then we get here to conspiracy, which at least I feel is another substantive crime. Now, I think but from what is said here, in this the language here, it could be argued that we're saying conspiracy is an included offense of the principal crime, so that you would just charge one count of the indictment, because you don't charge burglary, attempted burglary,
conspiracy,
solicitation to burglary, and various counts in the indictments now. And so either we got to make sure that we say conspiracy is an included, a lesser included offense of the principal crime, or we've got to do something with what my first comment was, is that what does the judge do? If you can charge in two counts, conspiracy to commit bank robbery and bank robbery, does the state have to elect prior to it going to the jury because he can only be convicted? Do they have to make the election at the time of plea? Or can they let the thing go to the jury and the judge instruct the jury, you return a verdict on... Well, let the jury return two guilty verdicts if they believe that he has been, and then choose a greater. Whichever one carries a greater penalty.
I don't think, we certainly didn't direct our attention to this, but the latter course is what I think is the best procedure. Let the thing go to the jury with instructions. Yeah.
You mean let it go as...
Well, isn't that essentially what we do with respect to the crime of murder?
No.
Murder, manslaughter, in second degree, we do that essentially, but there are some elements, many times there are elements with conspiracy that must be proven, that don't have to be proven
right.
With respect to the principal crime.
You're right.
And therefore,
it
can't logically be
a lesser
included crime.
Well, I see nothing wrong myself with the jury returning and the person being guilty of two separate crimes.
He has to be charged with
two separate
crimes.
Yeah.
And they are separate crimes and there are different elements.
How often do you use conspiracy as an evidentiary tool?
You use it as an evidentiary tool.
Well,
all the time.
No, my point is, that's what you're really using it for. But I don't think that it should, for the situation where two guys commit the bank robbery, this type of thing, if you can prove the crime, it still should be the main offense.
Yeah, but the prosecution many times might be able to prove conspiracy, but they couldn't prove the conviction. The jury might not believe some of that stuff.
Well, what I suppose I'm really getting at is maybe as a matter of policy, really, we ought to look at what we really think where conspiracy as such should be a crime. And otherwise, it should be simply a rule of evidence.
We've made it a crime back in some of these other sections.
Yeah.
I know, but does it really makes sense for in a lot of cases that it is a separate crime.
Oh, yeah.
Well, my opinion is, and I don't think it's fair to a guy to convict him of both.
But you know, Bruce, I think that probably your view is reflected in many states that take the view that conspiracy may be a separate offense, and mm-hmm. you can convict for both conspiracy and the actual commission of the crime. And that would, I think, support your theory you're advancing. Now, the subcommittee decided not to follow that policy, but there is strong support in many other states, if not most other states, that conspiracy is a separate kind of crime, not included, because it may be there may be convictions for both.
I don't quite understand
the kind of got ourselves into the box by the decision.
Both conspiracy to commit the crime and for the crime.
But really,
the common law, however, and I can't explain to you why, but the common law did merge conspiracy in the completed offense, just as it merged attempt. That there could not be a conviction in common law for both conspiracy and the completed crime. But I'll confess that I have sought, without success, information on the nature of included offenses with respect to conspiracy. I cannot find anything about it in the law.
Well, I think this is fair and right, because it says that you can't convict a man of both things. I think the man could be guilty of either one or the other, and could be actually guilty of both, but I think when the state's got his pound of flesh for that conduct that he's done, it's got it.
Well, of course, we could argue the same thing, that when you go out to rob banks, if you hit the Corvallis First National Bank and then go over to the U.S. National and then hit Citizens, why should the state be able to charge you and convict you of three different crimes? It's all one same course of conduct, and you have committed three separate crimes and are punishable three different times.
But the thing about it here is the reason you had the conspiracy was to accomplish this particular crime.
Right.
And it's all one thing that he did. You can have three conspiracies and three bank robberies.
It may not be just for that particular crime, though. It may be for a whole criminal course of conduct.
Let me understand one thing, Frank. Are you arguing in favor or against the motion made by me?
I am arguing against it, as it now stands. Yeah.
All right, Chairman. This is going to be a tired old motor joint, I guess. This tired old commission. You know, when we first started this thing, we always talked about our hypotheticals. We're all involved in sex crimes, and now we're talking about bank robberies.
All right. Well, we only have one more section to go on this one, and then we're going to get into something that'll spice you
up. Well, your motion was to adopt the whole damn thing, wasn't it?
Well, it's to adopt section, the language of section 3, essentially makes it a lesser included offense, subject to the caveat that when we get to sentencing, we review the question of whether there should be certain offenses where a conspiracy should be treated either as a separate offense.
I'll amend the motion to make it adopt section 13.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
with that proviso,
I'd like
to speak to that.
Now, I want Judge Burns as Subcommittee Chairman to.
Well, the thing that bothers me about voting in favor of Bruce's motion is that we haven't solved the procedural problem that Frank raised and that we missed in Subcommittee. And just to point out one other that I don't think was mentioned. In two is a person shall not be convicted, and in three a person may not be convicted.
And shall that, should be there.
That, well, I'm not so sure about that in light of the procedural difficulties mentioned. I'm somewhat inclined to think that because the procedure by which this will be implemented should be spelled out.
Well, would you like
that? I'm inclined to think we ought to send it back to subcommittee.
All it means to say that a person may be charged, but not convicted.
What this section, in effect, does, as far as I can see, and it's subject to the caveat, is that it makes the crime, what we always talk about as a crime of conspiracy, really makes it a rule of evidence. And that's what it really ought to be most of the time. Because in effect, you're not going to try to prove. You're going to try to prove that the guy committed a crime, and if you don't prove that or an attempt, you aren't going to prove a conspiracy.
Well, Lee, what you're saying is that if the guy is big enough and high enough in the mafia, he's free.
No, that is no. Wait just a minute. Well, Frank, you're not listening, because I put a caveat on it that when we get to sentencing, we either decide that we're going to. That we're going to make it an elevated crime of conspiracy, basically, and to treat the situation with the mafia.
An elevated rule of evidence?
No, I make it a higher offense.
Here. Where is it?
Or.
The only difference is that I'm for it.
I don't know.
that they very quickly convicted
him
of both
conspiracy
and
right, that's right.
I think one of the solutions is let the court figure it out. It's kind of a court question.
All right. The question is on Mr. Spaulding's motion to adopt 13 as is, with the caveat that was enunciated by Mr. Johnson. Now, is that clear?
Question.
All right. The question's been called for. We'll do it by roll call. Those in favor of the Spaulding motion, say aye.
Judge Burns?
Aye.
Carson?
Aye.
Chandler?
Pass.
Frost?
Aye.
Haas?
Aye.
Jernstedt?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Knight?
No.
Spaulding?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
You're doing it backwards.
No, I have a couple of members whose votes I want
to. We're all done. Section 9 is already approved.
Well, now let's do Section 9 while everybody's in a good mood. And the question is,
it's on page 45.
Let's just look at it. And without George explaining it, should it go? Did this come out of the subcommittee with a recommendation? Was it approved or by the subcommittee? Section 9.
I think it was. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was.
And the subcommittee felt that it should be in here rather than in procedure.
Well, we may have felt that it was just a commission question too, like that other section.
We said, send the section along to commission with the recommendation either that the subcommittee does not approve the substance of it, or alternatively that the subcommittee recommends the section be taken out and put into the procedural section. The commission could then make the decision when Professor Platt is available to present his views. This approach was agreeable to subcommittee members. We were hung up quite badly on 9, but Professor Platt thought it belonged here in the inchoate crime section, and some of us thought it belonged in the procedural section. I would make this suggestion to you, Mr. Chairman. The circuit judges have already recommended that the question of joinder, joint and separate trials, not limited to conspiracy cases, be studied and that recommendation be made to the next session of the legislature for
joining
permissive joinder, somewhat analogous to the federal rule. And since that is that matter will probably be considered somewhere or other, it still occurs to me for an even stronger reason that 9 ought to go into the procedural section and not go here.
I don't object to that at all. But the principal reason it's here, I suppose, is just following the general policy of the Model Penal Code, incorporating matters of procedure which are more closely related to the substance than other matters of procedure with respect to other kinds of crimes. And I think that I can say without fear of contradiction that most of the new codes otherwise have kept these in procedural revisions and not in the substantive part.
I move we transfer it to the procedural section and take action on it.
And rule on the merits when we get to that.
And rule on the merits when we get to that.
All right, you've heard the motion that we transfer this procedure and consider it at that point. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Let's take a 10-minute recess. What we would like to do, if we could, would be to get through prostitution and adjourn not later than 2:30. But I think it's appropriate to take a little recess.
I won't yield any questions.
All right, sex crimes.
Mr. Chairman, now,
the last time the commission had this article was in July, and at that time, a number of amendments were made. Now, many of these amendments went to really policy rather than structure of the draft. So I certainly don't want you to think I'm trying to blow anything by you here on this, because I am.
We're on new one.
You know, there's no way to talk about it.
I remember in subcommittee, the first time we took this up, I said, well, the states have gone both ways. And Bud Land just fell on the floor.
That sounds a little bit harder.
Okay. But insofar as the policy and the substance of the draft, there have been no changes contrary to what were approved by the commission as a whole in July. Now, in October, this was back before the subcommittee, and at that time we took up, and the most important thing we took up was the question of sexual misconduct with a minor. Now, that appears as in the draft, and I think we ought to take that up first, and then if there any...
One page.
This is on page 53 of your draft, section 14.
Well, I knew you steamrolled page, dog, but this is going a little bit too far.
Well, a motion to approve all page
52 pages. But I thought we ought to take this up first, because this is new material that was not before the commission in last July.
All right.
Now, what we were attempting to do here, basically, number one, we were trying to cover the situations in which the victim might either be a female or a male, involving a victim over the age of 16 but under the age of 18. Now, our previous draft did not get into that age victim. And this was one of the the area that was criticized the most from certain sources, criticized the most that we were not providing adequate protection for individuals over 16. Because our
old man section.
Because our draft had in effect repealed the crime of fornication. And although the statute was rarely used, there was a statute on the books to take care of intercourse with a girl over 16 or less than 18. So we were looking at that problem. And secondly, we were also trying to pick up the area that was previously covered by our contrib statute, contributing to the delinquency of a minor, and to fill the gap that was left there as a result of the Hodges decision.
Well,
now, insofar as Hodges is concerned, with respect to intercourse, whether it's sexual intercourse or deviant sexual intercourse, if the other person is less than 18, it would be covered under section 14 of our draft. Insofar as the fondling and manipulating offenses, that type of situation, we have our sections that were in their previous draft on sexual abuse, which gets to that problem. Now, I've gone at some length in the commentary, because particularly in light of Hodges, felt we needed to discuss some of the kinds of acts that had previously been held to be contributing under the pre-Hodges decisions, the type of sexually oriented conduct that would have constituted the crime of contributing to the delinquency of a minor. So we've tried to
try to bridge the gap there. Now, there will, we've also put in two other new sections, sections 15 and 16, which get to the public solicitation, public indecency type of conduct that is sexually oriented. The draft provides that a person commits the crime of sexual misconduct with a minor if, being a male, he engages in sexual intercourse with a female less than 18 years of age, or being a female, she engages in sexual intercourse with a male less than 18 years of age, or he engages in deviant sexual intercourse with another person less than 18 years of age, which could be either, the defendant in that case could either be male or female, or causes that person to engage in deviant sexual intercourse.
Well, does the male and section sub-one have to be over 18?
Yeah, that's going to be my question. You don't say.
Well, we're provided, we get to that with our defense section, which would be applicable to this section, which it's a defense to the charge if he's less than 3 years older.
Oh,
3 years older and less, or less than 3 years?
If he's less than 3 years older than the victim.
So that dang section still applies to this.
Yeah.
So it specifically says so on page 21 that the defense is applicable. So if the male is 19 and the girl is 17, it's a complete defense, right?
Yes.
Even for sexual deviant intercourse, or a deviant sexual intercourse, right?
Yes.
But when force is present, it's no...
Oh, force would take it out of this and put it in one of the other sections on sodomy or rape, whichever happens to be.
How about the girl of 18 and the boy of 17?
No crime.
Two.
Do whatever they
want
to
do.
No crime.
And it wouldn't have been a crime under a previous draft, either.
18 and 17.
Right. It is under the present law.
We were so busy doing non-support, and we didn't have time to do that.
Well, now, the only question that I have, Don, is the sexual abuse. We don't pick up everything that's presently covered by contributing to the delinquency, but what isn't picked up here that formerly was contributing is picked up under the sexual abuse statutes in the first and second degree. Is that right? You know, where the...
That's
finally,
yeah.
Yeah,
that's kind of a broad statement, because contributing, that's one of the problems.
It's the reason it went out the window.
Yeah, it covered all sorts of activity.
Right.
My comment would be generally yes, we'd practically that, but I certainly wouldn't want...
Oh no, this is certainly as broad as our contributing
statute. Is usually charged under contributing.
The usual case.
Yeah.
The fondling and the...
Have we approved sexual abuse?
Yeah, those sections...
Don't you think it would be well to put that three-year business in here so that you'd have a complete statute?
It applies to about five different sections.
Well, if you put it in there, then you're
thinking about
five years.
Well, now section 5 on page 21. Now, this would be a good time to mention this. The way I approach this language and this approach to it was not approved by the commission. The theory of it was approved because previously the question came up. Well, are we because we had said that in our statement of the crime that the defendant was more than 3 years older than the victim in order to be guilty of, say, rape in the second degree. So the question was brought up, well, now, is this going to require the state to plead and prove the age of the defendant? Well, clearly we're going to do that. Clearly, in the existing law, the state isn't required to prove the defendant's age.
Now, so what I did was.
It isn't? I think it is under the existing law of person of a statutory right.
Statutory right. No, you're not required to prove the.
Prove the complaining witnesses.
You allege and prove the victim's age.
It's
right.
The Affordable Rights Act says anybody over 16 or something.
Everybody over 16, but the cases have construed that as meaning the only. This is not an element of the crime. The only reason it's in there is because it changes the common law age of capacity on the part of the male, which was at common law 14. And the statute's been construed as just changing the common law age.
They didn't have to prove that.
No, the Oregon cases are consistent on that, but that's not an element of the crime.
Okay.
So we didn't want to change that, so I felt that if we frame it in terms of a defense, that it would make it abundantly clear that this is not an element of the crime, and this is to be raised by the defendant, because certainly he's in the best position to know what his age is. And the Section 5 then would apply as a defense to a certain section of the article, in which only in those cases where the victim's lack of consent was because of her age. And there we would provide that if he's less than 3 years older than the victim at the time of the offense. And I set out certain examples in the commentary. Rape in the third degree would be a defense. An example would be that in the case of a 15-year-old female victim and a 17-year-old defendant, it would be a defense, and that would change existing law, because now he could be charged and convicted of statutory rape. And so we would, but this does not change the policy decision that was made by the commission previously, that the kind of adolescent sexual conduct is not going to be looked at as criminal.
It does get rid of one of my big objections to it, the problem of the state proof.
That's exactly what it gets rid of, isn't
it? One thing that does bother me about this, I totally agree we shouldn't have a fornication statute. To have one in any respect, it isn't going to be enforced. But on the other side of it, sometimes we do use our law to express our moral disfavor, I think. Respect to minors, that this is there's more excuse for this than there is for other people. And I think there's going to be an awful lot of screaming and yelling. And basically, this commission is saying
that's exactly what this commission is saying, that it's all right.
I said that probably last July, and nobody listened.
I'll make the motion. In Section 5, we strike 14.
Well, he's going to strike the defense in our 3 years.
Striking the defense for 5-14 essentially becomes a fornication statute.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, in the age of 18 years.
Well, all right.
But the way it's drawn, then you're going to have the
if you fix on somebody under 16, it's no crime. If you fix on somebody between 16 and 18, he's got a crime.
That doesn't seem to be.
You're going to have an accomplice situation, aren't you? Which I guess you would have in an adultery case, which is part of the
case. Well, you wouldn't have an accomplice because of the way we've defined. Accomplices in our parties.
If
you're a victim of the crime, you're not accomplice, and if your conduct is incidental to the commission of the crime, you're not.
Yeah. But under this statute, being a female, she engages in sexual intercourse with a male.
Are we writing a moral code or a criminal code? Yeah, I think we ought to decide that pretty soon.
We're writing a criminal code, but we have in mind the moral effect on the society.
What is a criminal code but a moral code anyway?
Well, I have substantial moral standards that I don't come to the legislature and ask them to make everybody that doesn't adhere to my moral standards to make
not your moral standards, but you do come to the legislature and try to legislate the state as a whole's moral standards. That's what you're doing, really. Any crime. You say that a bad check is a bad business, so it's immoral, so we pass a law there.
Not at all. think morality and sin and criminal law are three different things. They come together frequently. I'm not going to put every sinner in jail. We're certainly not.
Well, I don't think that's the principle we're adopting here, but I think we are. No question we're making an exception here, but I think that I don't see that you follow a hard and fast rule. And you're making it a misdemeanor. Basically, it does give the police some authority to throw some kids out in the park, to tell them to get the hell out of there and go do it somewhere else.
Gives them authority to put them in jail.
I think this is one area you just.
I think you make a good point. I think it's going to spike on a lot of the criticism that's.
Many fiery criticism.
Anybody, any further discussion on the motion?
I'm not sure I understand it. What would?
Well, all right. Let me restate the motion. I move that we amend the code to direct the staff to amend the code to make it a misdemeanor for anyone under the age of 18 years of age to engage in sexual
and deviant sexual.
And deviant.
Anybody, regardless of their. Married or unmarried.
Well,
seems to well, Mr. Chairman, it might not be a bad idea.
A 16-year-old son of a friend of mine just got married to a 16-year-old girl.
And I don't particularly approve of the idea of doing this, but I really think we're jeopardizing the work of this entire commission. Maybe we understand it. This seems the most harmless thing we can do.
Depending on prosecutor's discretion to keep the courts clear.
Listen, all the way through this code, regardless of all you talk about prosecutor discretion, there's going to be prosecutor discretion.
No, I'm going to have very much case you brought.
Have in the past, I don't think it's less likely than in the future.
But if you do that, I think that you're going to have the criticism leveled at this that we're allowing a defense. If the victim's under 16, you've got a defense to a rape charge, a felony charge. But we're not going to allow the defense if the victim is under 18, maybe as much as 2 years older than a victim in a rape. And you're not going to allow the defense there.
You'd have to strike Section 5 if you're really going to follow through.
Yeah, this is really what Lee is saying, that the problem going to have to be worked out, that as long as the girl is under the age of 18, how far up in our degrees of rape do we go? 16 or?
In the first place, I'm trying to draft what in effect is kind of a lesser offense.
Let's say under the age of 16, so be a 15-year-old girl and a 17-year-old boy, he would have a good defense to prosecution for second or third degree rape, whatever that would be, if she's got the right old age of 15. So that, but he would not have a defense to this, what you call sexual misconduct, if he were 17 and she 15.
In other words, if they're both 16, he's committed a misdemeanor.
Yeah.
If she's 15, if she's a day younger than 16, no problem.
Sexual misconduct.
Yeah, it isn't rape.
Yeah, it would be under this too. Well, she is guilty of sexual misconduct also, because she engaged in sexual intercourse with a boy under the age of 18. So she's also guilty of sexual
misconduct. My whole point here is to define a totally separate crime, which is we regard as a minor petty offense, but it's an offense.
Of course, the purpose of Section 14 was not to get at the minor, but to get at the one who's taking advantage of the minor.
That's why I redrafted my motion. I understand this point. But what I'm saying is let's have a petty offense to deal with fornication between minors.
But I think your motion was
better the way it was originally. You strike 14 and split section 14.
You mean strike the figure 14 from section 5?
Correct. And split,
well, I thought it accomplished what I wanted to accomplish.
I think it did.
Mr. Chairman, don't you then have this inconsistency?
You mean with the under 16?
Yeah.
Well,
one is consensual and one is non-consensual. If you're thinking of statutory rape as being non-consensual, then you're wrong, because statutory rape is consensual. Or
statutory rape, depending on the interest there, the girl who is attacked or who is, has intercourse with the older man.
Well, what I'm saying is the same 16-year-old boy. Same 16-year-old boy. He gets the defense of three, if he's within 3 years, if it's statutory rape, which is dependent upon her age, not the act, or his age, depending on her age. If he's 16 and she's 16, crime. If he's 16 and she's 15, and we keep in that 3-year defense, no crime.
Well, except that he could be guilty of sexual misconduct.
There's no frame of rape.
Both of them.
Yeah.
Both of them.
He would have a good defense of statutory rape because he's within the 3-year period. But
which isn't valid.
Have a
what?
Is
no, it's not.
Well, in the Iowa misdemeanor. All right, George has a comment.
Well, we're going to refocus our attention on the main problem, I think, with this whole article. If we begin now to do, well, Lee has a very reasonable suggestion, I think, but if we begin now, or you, that is, begin now by really compromising, you're compromising in a tactical way without knowing the parties with whom you're going to have to compromise. This compromise, in a sense, this toning down of the thing, may not satisfy at all those people who are going to scream against this sexual article, no matter what you do now. It seems to me to do what you think is the best now, and compromise tactically and strategically when you get to the legislature. I think we all feel that there's no sense losing
charge,
the whole code because of the sexual offense
charge. Most effect.
I think I'd be inclined to... Do we all feel that it's necessarily a crime for 16-year-olds to have intercourse? Now, I'd be shocked, tremendously hurt, if my son or daughter got into this situation at age 16, but I'll be damned if I'd want the state to prosecute them for a crime. Now, you may feel differently on this.
How about your neighbors?
Yeah, well, that's different.
There are some parents who I think feel quite strongly that they would like the thought.
I know there are.
They don't like the idea of their child being brought in. The thought that the criminal law is there deters. They feel it may be a deterrent, whether they're rational in that determination or not. But I certainly would, without question, say that my motion is primarily based upon the politics of the thing. But I think the initial charge of what this commission has done is a lot more detrimental. There won't be any room for compromise. The damage will be done.
Well, no. You got 30 seconds.
Well, now, first of all, the policy decision that the sexual conduct between adolescents should not be looked upon as criminal was approved of by this commission in July. The criticism that has been leveled, at least the information I've gotten, the criticism that was leveled at that draft, where it stopped at 16, was not because we were going to exclude adolescent sexual experimentation from the coverage of the criminal law, but they felt that we were saying, in effect, that once you're 16, you can go out and consent to all sorts of sexual activity with dirty old men and that sort of thing, that we were turning these kids loose too early. And that was the
you
idea.
Know why that was? That was because I think because the questions were directed to Wally and me. We had, at least I very intentionally tried to steer them on to that point because I was afraid if they got to this one, they'd really open it up wide.
Do you think the criticism is going to be more severe because we don't want to charge kids who are participating in sex with other kids with the crime?
I think the public is a lot more tolerant of the idea of not making it criminal conduct between consenting adults when they start talking about their kids.
Okay, of course that's correct. Let's have a voice or a roll call vote on the motion to delete
reference to section 14 from section
5. Why don't you state it in the general terms?
Well,
I think in case anybody, is anybody hung up on?
Well, I want to make sure I understand what I'm voting on. Are we voting on removing 14 from 5, or are we voting on?
Well, we're voting on. We're voting on eliminating the defendant's age as a defense to the proscription.
Well, I'm going to restate my motion because I think it's strictly a policy question. My motion is in effect that we have a petty offense of fornication between minors.
You bring in fornication, you're looking at the fornication statute right there, but you're going beyond that. Fornication, as I understand the present law, deals with 16 to 18 year old, much like we have here, right?
Fornication now is a female less than 18 and a male more than 18.
Right, so you're not talking about fornication, you're talking contributing. That's what if the two 16 year olds do have intercourse now, what crime do they by the day?
It's not statutory rape, and
it's
under your contrib. No, and it's not fornication. It's not contrib either.
Does the person have to be over the age of 18 to contribute? No, he can be charged. I mean, the guy or the girl, for that matter, can be charged in juvenile court.
What would you charge? Two 16-year-olds.
No, I don't. I disagree with that.
Today, yeah.
And it's juvenile. Well, it's juvenile.
That their condition and circumstances that evening were such maybe to endanger their welfare.
Now I'll take issue with you on that, Frank, that another juvenile, a person under 18, can be charged under contrib. I don't think the Oregon cases hold that. In fact, I think they express it over the contrary. That and on page 58, I point out the statute apparently was not intended, I'm talking about the contrib statute, to apply to other juveniles, since the Oregon court has impliedly scoffed at the notion that a juvenile could contribute to the delinquency of a juvenile. And I cite State versus Everson, 1962 case. For similar reasons, the child is not an accomplice to the crime. State versus Harvey held that. State versus DuBois, State versus Holland. Addressing then on the question of accomplice, State versus Du Bois said, certainly it cannot reasonably be contended that a girl could be prosecuted for a violation of the statute governing the delinquency of minors. And after all, that is the test as to whether she was accomplice. So I don't think it does apply to other juveniles. So we would be broadening the contrib law if we make this section 14 apply to other juveniles.
I think that if we strike 14 from 5, then we've got a different problem from 14 as far as we've got to face the accomplice problem. Because
that's why I was trying to all I'm getting in the same place are. Unfortunately, the only way we can do it is expressly.
Well, why don't you restate your motion and we'll vote on this as a matter of policy, and if the motion prevails, then the staff can get the appropriate language.
Draft appropriate language. Sexual intercourse between consenting minors,
not married.
Petty offense.
All right. You've heard the motion.
Well, now wait a minute. Consenting minors is all the way to 21. Do you want to go to 21?
Or 18. Under 18. And you mean sexual intercourse and deviant sexual intercourse, don't you? All right. You've heard the motion. Those who are in favor, say aye as a major. All those who are opposed, say aye.
Judge Burns?
No.
Carson?
No.
Chandler?
Aye.
Ross?
No.
Hawes? Jernstead?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Knight?
Aye.
Spaulding?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye. Okay. The motion is passed.
Let's see.
legal standpoint, we're a little late in exercising our Puritan ethic.
Well, late in exercising what?
Puritan ethic.
We've
already taken the plaque on this thing.
Right.
It's over now. We're just
I
think we've taken the very limited part of the first part of the plaque on this thing.
Well, it's huge important. In the very distant, the rest of the code is going to be a lot harder to get out.
No.
And you're never going to satisfy the people in the sexual code.
No. The only way you could vary this in the rest of the code is to change the chapter heading from sexual offenses to
railroad law.
And there's something like that. Dr. Wally and me, and I never mentioned this, and I focused on the whole thing that our basic policy decision was the conduct of sending out a scared to death.
Well, I spent a good bit of time talking with Joe Felton, and he pointed this very clearly out. So what we've established, and I think from the comments, we have to face up to it, we've established the law, the criminal law is hypocritical. We are now subscribing a line to which we have no intent to enforce, a line to which, and this is what Judge Felton and I have talked about, and he believes this is true, that there's some social purpose in doing this, saying here's a line, we say it's a crime. Now we all know we're not going to enforce it. We're going to be able to tell our children, now that's a crime, don't do it. Now, if they ask, is it enforced? Well, I'd be fair with them and say, no, it's not enforced. It's still coming.
Well, if we didn't do this, the kids are all going to read the newspaper and quote it, and what the bar everybody has thought was not accepted by the criminal law is now accepted, and therefore it's bad.
Well, Bruce, you know good and well your children aren't going to do that.
I don't know that good and well.
Well, the point I'm making is that you're assuming that public law reflects private morals. And that's not so at all.
At times it does.
The main thrust of the morals versus crime argument here is that there are some areas that ought to be left to the church and the family. And this is one of them, whether minors can experiment sexually. And we are now saying we're not going to leave that to the church in the moral ethics of the family. We're going to insert ourselves here, as Wally points out, in a hypocritical fashion. I think it's
What about the sections we're about to discuss, George?
Judge Burns has a note here. He says that now is the time to bring up the matter of the loose morals of the WAC who was guilty of contributing to the delinquency of a major.
What? Don't say that.
Now, I have a question with regard to 14, Don, and somebody asked me this. Are we going to do away with the contributing to the dependency of a minor statute, or did the court do that in the... Did they vitiate that statute also?
Well, that wasn't before the
court. No, but I mean, did it by implication?
No, we're not doing away with that. That's covered under our family offenses against the family.
Okay, so that statute isn't going to be repealed by the sexual misconduct to minors. All right. Well, do we have a motion on section 14 here? We have to approve it only.
Why should we approve section
14? We can't approve section 14
in light of the motion that was carried.
Just blocked out the defense.
That was something.
We were instructed to draft a new crime about.
To take the place of 14 was implicitly.
I think it's implicit. I understand what 14 is.
Well, if 14 is out the window with the vote just taken.
Okay.
I thought that it simply struck from section 5, the reference to the 14.
The motion was to draft appropriate language to make it an offense for
consenting minors.
Consenting minors to.
Consenting persons under the age of 18.
Right.
To engage in sexual intercourse or deviant sexual.
But that motion did not imply that we were going to eliminate the proscriptions that are set down in section 14.
That's right, because that deals with older books.
Right.
Greater added.
That's really what it was for. That's why I made it before.
I think that it's appropriate that,
protecting
that we vote. Our approval or our disapproval of section 14.
Well, we have a new crime now that doesn't exist in present law that leaves most of those to a new crime against this activity that we apparently all, or the majority feel, is so reprehensible that we don't have a crime against. We now, well, we now draw that as...
Don't get so morally outraged.
And it's probably this is probably a bad idea to bring this up today without giving you a chance to study the
ground. 6 months I've stood out there and taken this heat for this goddamn committee, and now you guys go belly up. I think it's
I don't want you to think, Mr. Carson, that you're the only one who's taken any heat.
I don't. I don't at all, and I apologize for my outburst. But
this is a really a tough area, and I think, but. Where we've really zeroed in on this new law that you want us to draft is on the 17-year-olds. That's where you're really going to... Because when you look at our existing law, if the girl's over 17, she's over 16, it isn't statutory rape. And so before she's going to be then protected by another sexual crime statute, if it's going to be fornication, she's going to have to be under 18, but the defendant's going to have to be over 18. So you can't have a 17-year-old defendant in fornication. And you can't have a 17-year-old defendant contributing to the delinquency of this girl under our present law. So what we've done, we've said that if you're a 17-year-old girl and a 17-year-old boy, you've committed a crime if you have sexual intercourse. Now, is this really what the commission wants to say?
Yeah, right.
And I mean, that's really a harder line than the law takes now.
Sure.
And if we're trying to protect the immature, are we really doing that by going after older kids than the law goes after now?
Tom, you're arguing reason.
Right.
But sometimes you have to put politics above.
But I know, but are the people who are objecting to what we've done, are they asking for a harder line? I don't think that anyone's asking for a harder line than the law.
But Don, most people don't understand what the present status of the law is.
Well, that's right.
If you ask the average individual on the street, he'd say, well, certainly it's a crime for minors to engage in that kind of conduct.
But we voted. We're going to have another shot at it. The commission might very well overturn the action that we take today. But let's. There was.
Mr. Chairman, would the commission, would the members here today like to reserve any further action on this until you've had a chance to study this draft? I apologize for springing on you the way we did today, but.
I think,
especially in light of the action that's been taken.
I think that you said there were three things to do, and I think that we ought to. We're going to have to come back to it, but let's. Go ahead with the other two or three sections that there are done and try to finish up all but what we're going to have to come back to on the Johnson motion, because it's we're into it now, and I think it's a little bit too early. Where do we go?
I'm going to ask a question. Are we going to talk about section 14 now?
I think it's properly for the committee.
Is it clear that section 14 applies only to a male over the age of 18 years in sub 1?
It doesn't say so.
And similarly, a female over the age of 18 years.
Because of our 3-year thing, it has to apply to a male or a female over the age of 18, because the female has got to be at least 16 or be one of the other statutory rape ones. So that means with 3 years, it's going to apply to a boy that's at least 20.
But in light of that policy decision,
we may have another crime, as Wally said, or I suppose this could be amended around to fit into it. But the way this thing is now, without the regard to what we just did, this could only apply to a 19-year-old.
Why do you say that?
Because if he is within 3 years, it is a defense. Your girl has got to be at least 16, or it's going to be rape in the third degree or fourth degree or
Section
whatever.
Section 5,
it's going to be at least, so the girl has to be at least 16.
Yeah.
or the boy, if it's an older female, has got to be at least 16. So that means to get the 3 years, the boy's got to be over 19 to have this statute come into play. Because otherwise, under our Section 5, it's perfectly all right for somebody 19 and, or 18 and 16 to have intercourse, right?
Well,
no, but assuming that he doesn't want to assert that defense. As I read chapter section 14, it would be a at least initially indictable crime for an 19-year-old boy and an 18-year-old girl.
The same as it would be initially for a 16-year-old boy and a 14-year-old girl under rape in the second degree.
You say, assuming he doesn't want to assert that defense, what the hell would he?
Mr. Chairman, the reason I'm kind of puzzled on this thing is that though there are some examples given on page 21, I'm just not really sure in which instances a 16-year-old girl or 17-year-old girl, whatever it may be. Frankly, I'd like to have a chart in front of me so that I can tell what a 16-year-old is guilty of or what her boyfriend is guilty of at various ages. I mean, I'm just thoroughly confused now.
Well, that's why this was restructured, and all the question of, or every question about the defendant's age was slugged into this defense section, because previously we had these complex sections where we had the age of the girl, or the age of the victim, and the age of the defendant all set out, and that's where the objection I think reasonably was made, that this was too complicated. So now, as far as the state's concerned, they just go ahead and allege it much the same as they would now. And the age of the defendant is his problem. That's his problem. It's going to have to be raised as a defense.
I think Jim's asking,
if you got a 17-year-old girl, and she had sexual intercourse with a 20-year-old male, it's not a crime.
It would be a crime under Section 14 as drafted. It would be sexual misconduct with a minor.
But
because he's not less than 3 years older than the victim.
But he'd have a defense under Section 5.
He's 20 and she's 17. He's 3 years older.
Depends on.
He's 19. He's 19 and she's 17.
He's got a defense.
He'd have a defense.
And if she is 16 and a half and he's 18 years and 1 month, would he have a defense under 14 and 5?
No.
She's 16 years and 6 months old and he's 18 years and 1 month old.
No.
Now, I set out two examples on page 21. For example, rape in the third degree, if the female victim is 15, and the defendant's 17, he'd have a good defense because he's less than 3 years older than the victim. Rape in the second degree, in which the victim has to be less than 14, if she's 13 and a half and the defendant was 16, he'd have a good defense because he'd be less than 3 years older.
And similarly, assuming a girl 16 and a half and a boy 18 years and 1 month, He would not be. You couldn't convict him under Section 14 for sexual misconduct with a minor.
As it's presently written.
But presumably,
I don't see how we can pass on Section 14 until we see exactly what we're going to do with Lee's proposal and where it fits.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think it's important that we draft Lee's proposal to find out what you feel about this area, because we might as well do it all at the same time. If that three-year fence is not going to be, in other words, consistent, what Lee's motion is just to pick that 17-year-old and say the two 17-year-olds that have intercourse are guilty of the crime. And I don't think that's his policy. I think he's saying that sexual intercourse or deviant sexual intercourse among all people under the age of 17, under the age 18, 17 on down, is the crime. This minor crime.
And there's no defense.
The defense is not applicable. And that permeates the whole shebang. So I think we do need to know it. Just where we sit.
Well, and I think this is important too, because the thing you really ought to be concerned about is the protection of the girl or protection of the immature victim. And if we're not going to allow this defense to the relatively minor crime of
sexual misconduct. I'm talking about a crime that you're going to have a penalty for, which I said it was a petty offense, and I would assume we wouldn't have a maximum sentence of 5 years.
No one gets to make it fit into this thing.
Right. Don, without regard to the merits of what you propose, could it be accomplished by way of draftsmanship by a separate section, say section 15, notwithstanding any other provision of law? Sexual intercourse or deviant sexual intercourse between consenting minors under the age of 18 is a Class C misdemeanor. Is that what you're talking about, Lee?
Yeah.
Could
I ask you a question about Section 5? The change that you made in putting it all in one thing like that. One of my big objections to this 3-year thing was based upon the California case, and if I recall correctly, we may have put it in our code too. This mistake is to age. I thought, like under the quotas we have it now, by gosh, I thought she was 15 and a half, and by gosh, she was only 15 and 4 months, you see. So we're giving them, we did give them that defense. Now, by putting this in as a defense that he was less than 3 years, are we still leaving open that defense that? Rather, his defense being that I am within 3 years, it's I thought I was within 3 years.
Yeah, Section 3 has ignorance or mistake as a defense in there.
What page?
Page 16.
So we've still got the problem in the code of the fact that, my gosh, I thought that...
I thought she was 16, she was there drinking in this bar, and so on.
Yeah, sub 2 really gets there.
She said she was in junior high, and by gosh, she was only in grade school.
Yeah, we don't allow it.
It would be okay, but now it's not.
We're not going to allow the defense if the victim was less than 12. But if the criminality of the conduct depends on the victim being of some other age, I mean, under the age of consent, but some other age other than 12, we would allow the affirmative defense of a reasonable mistake. I didn't change that because this was agreed upon in the last commission meeting.
Mr. Chairman, what's the motion report? There is a motion. I think perhaps now that it was a mistake to run into this without having us realize exactly what we were going to be considering. But what are the elements or the components, the sections of this draft here that's in front of us that the commission has not approved? The whole thing?
14, 15, and 16 in substance and form. The rest of the draft has not been approved in form. It's been approved in policy and substance. I was directed to redraft preliminary draft number 2 to conform to the policy decisions made at the July meeting. And I think I've done that. But as far as the format's concerned and the structure, they haven't been approved. For example, such as Section 5, where I put them all in as a defense. This was to reflect the commission's policy that they didn't want the defendant's age stated in the statement of the specific crime.
Okay. Well, then I think the question is whether or not we're going to approve Section 14.
Do we need him there since they're not married?
No, we've got that in our general provisions in the draft.
Okay, that answers it.
We define female as a female person who is not married to the actor. And then we say spouses living apart under a decree of separation from bed and board are not married to one another for purposes of this definition.
I would like to define something as different than actually is. What the heck? Female is one that's not married. What's one that is married?
Well, she's still a female, but she's not a female for the purposes of a sexual offense.
Of certain sexual offenses.
Of any sexual offenses.
What about rape, forcible rape?
Yeah, I'll take that back, yeah. Well, forcible rape, of course, you've got a different element in there. But.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not at all sure that it's clear, but if you say it is, I'll accept your word for it, that it's clear that 14 presently applies to those who are over 18, or I guess maybe 18 and older.
Well,
theoretically, I suppose, if you had a 16-year-old girl and a 17-year-old boy, theoretically, if the state didn't take any, the police didn't check at all to see how old he was, theoretically, he could be charged under Section 14. But all he would have to come in and prove in his defense that he was 17 years of age. But he's going to have to be at least 3 years older, which would mean he'd have to be at least 19 and however many days or months it takes to be 3 years older than the girl. Before he can actually be charged.
Now, perhaps I should get at it this way.
Yeah, to be convicted. And then he comes in.
If the boy were 17, and the girl were 13, and both those ages were alleged, and the boy were accused of sexual misconduct with a minor under Section 14, sub 1, and he demurred. Would his demur be sustained?
If he's 17 and she's 13?
Correct.
Probably not on the basis of less included offense. If they elect to charge a lesser offense to start off with, they're not going to demur you.
But I had understood you earlier to say, at least superficially, 14 sub 1 applies only to someone 18 or older, and then he doesn't have the defense if there's more than 3 year disparity in ages. What I'm trying to get at is, if that's really what it means, that's fine. I don't care. If you're a male and you engage in sexual intercourse with a female less than 18 years of age, and the indictment alleges that defendant John Doe was age 17 and he had intercourse with Mary Smith age 13, I don't think the demur would be sustained. I think it'd be overruled.
Sure.
Yeah, you have a crime, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because they charged a lesser crime than the statutory rape actually was.
Charged statutory rape?
Well, sure. Yeah, probably. No, what he's saying is that you're charging him the sexual misconduct.
Oh, for some reason you don't?
Yeah, for some reason, like when the proof or maybe they would say that it actually charged second degree rape or third degree rape, whatever it was, rather than sexual misconduct, regardless of what they call it, because her age was 13.
Yeah, presumably it would also be an offense on the Johnson Amendment.
And if your defendant would be happier with a second degree rape charge, you could always accommodate him and come back and file against him for that.
Yeah, yeah, if he was so stupid as to rape that.
What's your wish?
Will we approve section 14?
You've heard the motion. Roll call. Everybody in favor, say aye if the motion calls, of course.
Judge Burns?
No.
Carson? Chandler?
Aye.
Ross?
No.
Jernstead?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Knight?
Aye.
Spaulding?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
Chair, I move to adjourn.
Do you think we'll have any problem with Luke's solicitation? There's just two more of them. Let's see if we can. I hate to have so many people come so far for a 2-day meeting and not. Was there any problem at the commission meeting, Don, about Luke's solicitation? Is this new? Or
no, it wasn't even before the commission last time.
Maybe.
And the reason was that these are really, these are two areas that we were going to put in some other articles. But the subcommittee felt that it might be well to place them along with our sex offenses to get at the possible objections, particularly with respect to deviant sexual intercourse. When we're saying, in effect, that deviant sexual intercourse between consenting adults in private is not criminal. And we felt that the objection would be raised, possibly, that this is going to allow all kinds of terrible things going on the streets and solicitation for deviant sexual intercourse in the parks and restrooms and things like this, which we didn't intend. And so this was in here to make it a crime, presumably a misdemeanor, for soliciting another in a public place for the purposes of engaging in deviant sexual intercourse. And this is directed at the, really not at the crime of deviant sexual intercourse, but at the affronting of public sensibilities and that sort of thing.
How about isn't this going a little hard at difficult situations where it's, two guys that know themselves, they know you. It isn't what you're trying to protect against is the.
Some stranger comes up to me and makes an approach.
The commentary, I think, makes that clear.
Well, it isn't the way it reads, though. It's just done in a public place, period. I don't.
But it's the.
It's the act of solicitation, is it?
It says it is not intended to reach purely private conversations between persons having an established intimacy, even conducting a public place.
But I don't think. Well, I don't care. You can write all a commentary at once. I don't know what the section says. It's just got to be a solicitation in a public place.
Well, we felt that if it was a private conversation between the two queers, that
they're not likely to charge you.
There isn't going to be anyone to complain about.
Well, we don't mind what they do.
If we're saying it's okay for them to engage in this conduct in private, that if they want to talk about it privately, although it's in a public place, that they want
to go to a gay bar. And
well, I got a little bit because I think one of the things here we are kind of governing the principle, this is an area sometimes when law enforcement authorities get a little bit over anxious and just kind of thing to call them in on the grounds that they were publicly solicited. Well, sometimes you get harassment.
Any other discussion?
Well, I'll make a motion.
All right.
I don't like it.
Well,
I'm not sure.
I make a motion that I don't like it.
Well, I can't state it. Isn't clear, but I think it should be solicits another person or I would make it a defense, I suppose, of this section.
Solicitation.
Knew each other prior to the solicitation.
Define knowing each other.
Yeah. Well, this is why it's a kind of a tough
word, solicitation.
Well, I knew the password.
Well, let's vote then on the policy matter of the SIF of these amendments. The majority favors it, then we'll get down to the brass tacks. Everybody in favor of the Johnson Amendment, say aye as your names are called.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, may I definitely restate the
suggestion?
Well,
something more than a
loose
suggestion.
Somehow I'd like to amend the statute.
Well, that's a pretty clearly stated.
In order to make it clear that it does not cover the purely private conversation.
65. Page 65. All right.
Well, all right. That it only covers solicitation of persons that are unknown to the perpetrator.
If in a public place you solicit another person that he doesn't know,
I realize it's very hard to draft.
How about, and in a manner likely to offend the sensibilities of other persons?
Well, then, damn you, get two guys talking over in a corner in a gay bar. One puts a hand on the knee of the other, and then some old blue nose comes out, some Lee Johnson type comes out and complains.
Hauls him in.
I think that the sense of what you are expressing is covered. Time and again, we rely upon the commentary to serve as a direction as far as legislative intent is concerned.
The fifth paragraph of commentary makes it pretty clear to me. Now, if you can put the fifth paragraph into one sentence someplace, it just wouldn't hurt to put it in the section itself. But particularly the second sentence. First and second sentence.
Okay, ready to vote?
Yeah.
All right, those in favor of this amendment say aye to major call.
Judge Burns?
No.
Carson?
No.
Chandler?
No.
Frost?
No.
Jernstead?
No.
Johnson?
Pass.
Yes.
No.
No.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, George has raised a question that didn't occur to us, frankly, in the subcommittee. Now, we've used the word solicitation here, and he's pointed out that we've defined that word in our Code of Crimes now. The word solicitation is now a word of art as far as our criminal code is concerned. Perhaps it might be confusing if we use that word in different contexts here in this. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah. Could we not achieve that, however, by saying that this is sui generis, or we can just come right out and say this is an oddball section that we put in for purely base motives, and it's all by itself, and we're not going to borrow the meaning or transfer the meaning of solicitation in this section. Can't you word that sort of artfully, Donna?
Can't we find another word for solicitation?
If that were a problem, we're only dealing with the offense. You could call it public nuisance.
You
call it public lewdness. If he commits the crime of public lewdness, while in a public place, he solicits another person.
Yeah. The word solicits.
So he proposes to another person.
Yeah.
It's the right
word. It's called
a word of art.
He proposes.
Or suggests to another person. It's not a crime, you know, consenting adults now to engage in immediate sexual intercourse, so it's not proper to say one
of the solicitation as used in this section does not carry the meaning as used in section.
Well, how about invitation to commit to sexual deviant intercourse? Why don't we, lewd has it, why are we hung up on lewd solicitation then? We have to explain what we mean by lewd solicitation because we don't explain what lewd is. So why don't we just say invitation or request or whatever to engage in deviant sexual intercourse? That's what
we're talking about.
Could we permit the staff a certain amount of flexibility to on this issue,
we can work the other thing back in here.
We can't call it
here a little
off. All right.
You're right.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve the section with the understanding that the staff will rephrase it in the light of the class to provide it.
All right. You heard Judge Burns' motion. We'll do it by voice vote. All in favor? Section 15.
Aye.
Opposed. Okay, Gary. I want to adjourn after section 16.
I'll move it through section.
Well, this is really gets to
the exposure.
Yeah, or well, back at Ann Arbor last summer, they were having some problems with some of the college students performing sexual acts in the street. This was a form of protest against something or other.
I suspect
that's a protest.
You should have read the San Francisco Chronicle stories on the big rock festival out of Livermore last weekend. They needed a statute like this. They did badly.
And about 3,000 cops to enforce it, too.
Yeah.
And it also gets to the
five baby porn,
the indecent exposure. What we call it on the.
But on sub 3, why do we need with the intent?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
Active, exposing his genitals.
Period.
Well, you're out in the woods. Well, wait a minute, you're out in the woods. Oh, really? You're hunting. You're going to have to come all the way back to the standard service station where you're committed a crime.
Well, he's not in a public place.
The park, out in the woods? Federal Service Forest?
Or the drunk on his way home who stops off in an alley to relieve himself would not violate this section.
I'm sure you don't
want to.
Because you'd have, unless you could show that
he's not arousing himself.
Plumbing being
the leader. Relieved but not to arouse.
Right.
Then the guy can just walk down the street naked as long as he doesn't have any specific.
Do you hear that? Do you want to vote on the Chandler Amendment? Is it an affirmative defense to relieve, not to arrest?
If you're within 3 years, Dave.
Yes,
don't pick a young tree.
The United States Supreme Court is going to enjoy this record. What do you want to do?
Well, I wonder if that tree doesn't belong under indecent exposure. Do we have something for
no, this is
this
the,
is
this
the,
is our
this is all we got.
Yes.
I certainly don't think the tree is very complete because what about the guy? He didn't do it to necessarily arise in desire. He's doing it to offend me.
You just wander down the street.
Okay, we've got a disorderly conduct that would get to this guy under our article on disorderly conduct.
That's not a sex
offense.
I don't think you ought to charge him with a sex offense. You can get to him under disorderly
conduct. The present law says where you expose yourself to excite or arouse.
Chairman, I move to adopt Section 16.
All right. Motion is to adopt Section 15. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Now, postpose.
16.
All right. Have you sufficiently looked at sections 1?
I don't remember whether we have.
All right, let's.
We'll come back some other time.
We'll come back some other time. Now, what we want to do is we want to have commission meetings on the 9th and 5th, Friday and Saturday, of January, and the 30th and 31st of January. And when you all get back to your offices,
and when?
January.
Yeah. 9th and 5th.